Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, A History of the Federal Reserve, Volume 1, 1913-1951 by Alan H. Nulzer is a large-scale work of economic and institutional history that reconstructs how the United States Central Bank developed from its creation in 1913 through the Treasury, Federal Reserve Accord of 1951, written by a prominent monetary economist. The book is not a general overview of macroeconomics, but a document-driven narrative that explains why policymakers acted as they did at crucial turning points. Meltzer draws heavily on internal Federal Reserve materials such as minutes, correspondence, and reports, including sources that became more accessible decades after the events. Across war finance, the boom and bust of the 1920s and 1930s, the Great Depression, and World War II era interest rate policies. The book tracks the evolution of the Fed as an organization and a policymaker. Its purpose is to clarify how ideas, institutional design, and political pressures shaped monetary policy outcomes during the Fed formative years. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the Federal Reserve origins as a political compromise and the consequences of its structure. A central theme in Meltzer's account is that the Federal Reserve was born from compromise rather than from a clean blueprint for an effective central bank. The system combined a board in Washington with regional reserve banks, reflecting tensions between centralized authority and regional, bank-centered influence. Meltzer treats this design not as background but as a causal factor that affected how policy was debated, implemented, and learned from. In the early decades, the division of responsibilities and the uneven distribution of expertise across the system could slow responses and blur accountability. The book emphasizes that institutional incentives and governance mattered because monetary policy requires timely, coordinated action and a coherent framework for interpreting financial conditions by following discussions inside the system. Meltzer shows how organizational arrangements interacted with prevailing policy doctrines and how this combination contributed to repeated errors. The result is an institutional history that explains policy performance not only by external shocks, but also by the decision-making machinery that processed those shocks. This topic sets up the book's broader argument that the Fed struggled to become an effective modern central bank because its structure and operating assumptions hindered adaptation. Secondly, from World War I to the early 1920s war finance, inflation, and a hard disinflation, Meltzer devotes significant attention to the period when the new central bank had to operate amid extraordinary fiscal demands. World War I finance forced the Federal Reserve to balance multiple objectives, including supporting government borrowing while maintaining financial stability. The book uses this era to illustrate how the Fed operating tools and conceptual models were still developing, and how policy choices were shaped by the interaction of Treasury needs, banking system conditions, and limited experience with nationwide monetary management. The post-war transition then exposed the costs of shifting from wartime arrangements to peacetime stability. The sharp downturn of 1920 to 1921 becomes a case for examining how the Fed interpreted inflation, credit conditions, and the role of interest rates and discount policy. Meltzer uses internal deliberations to show how officials framed the problem and what they believed monetary policy could and could not accomplish. This early episode matters in the book because it foreshadows later difficulties, the tendency to rely on imperfect indicators, the challenge of coordinating the system, and the political sensitivity of actions that affect government finance and the broader economy. It also demonstrates that the Fed role was contested from the start, not only in theory but in operational practice. Thirdly, the 1920s leadership, evolving tools, and the challenge of stabilizing a modern economy, the book portrays the 1920s as a decisive decade in which the Federal Reserve began to act more like an active central bank, while still lacking a fully reliable policy framework. Meltzer highlights the influence of leading officials, especially at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and explains how personalities and institutional positions mattered for how policy innovations were advanced. The decade saw greater use of open market operations and more attention to national and international financial conditions, reflecting an economy becoming more integrated and capital markets more important. Yet Meltzer argues that the system remained prone to misreading signals and to internal disagreement about objectives such as price stability, credit conditions, and financial speculation. The 1920s narrative connects domestic policy to international pressures, since the United States' gold position and cross-border financial flows influenced choices and constraints. Rather than treating the decade as a simple prelude to the crash, Meltzer examines how the Fed attempted to balance economic growth, banking stability, and concerns about asset market excess. This topic is important because it shows the Fed in transition, experimenting with instruments and coordination, but still operating under assumptions that would prove costly once conditions deteriorated sharply at the end of the decade. Fourthly, the Great Depression and the limits of the Fed policy framework. Meltzer's treatment of the Great Depression focuses on how the Federal Reserve interpreted the unfolding collapse and why it failed to respond forcefully enough to arrest banking, panics, and monetary contraction. The book is known for its detailed reconstruction of what policymakers believed they were seeing in real time, using internal records to connect decisions to the prevailing doctrines about money, credit, and the gold standard environment. Rather than attributing the outcome solely to bad luck or a single mistake, Meltzer emphasizes how a flawed model of how the economy worked shaped the Fed reading of indicators and the choice of instruments. He also examines how internal divisions and institutional design could weaken coordinated action across the system. The narrative covers the early 1930s deterioration, subsequent policy shifts, and the later downturn of 1937 to 1938. Using these episodes to show how difficult it was for the institution to learn from experience when the underlying analytical framework remained unchanged. This topic matters because it offers the book's most consequential lesson. Central banking outcomes depend not just on the availability of tools, but on the ideas and organizational capacity required to deploy them under stress. Lastly, subordination to the Treasury, wartime rate pegs, and the road to the 1951 Accord. In the later part of the volume, Meltzer traces how the Federal Reserve became increasingly constrained by fiscal priorities, particularly as government financing needs dominated in the mid-1930s and during World War II. The book describes an era in which maintaining low and stable government borrowing costs became a major objective, limiting the Fed's ability to pursue independent monetary stabilization. Wartime arrangements included policies that effectively pegged interest rates on government securities, tying central bank actions closely to Treasury debt management. Meltzer uses this period to explore the institutional and political meaning of central bank independence, showing that independence is not an abstract ideal but a practical condition that shapes what policies are feasible. The culmination is the Treasury Federal Reserve Accord of 1951, which is presented as a turning point that helped establish the modern relationship between monetary policy and fiscal authority. By closing the volume with this episode, Meltzer links the Fed early history to enduring debates about coordination versus dominance, and about how a central bank can maintain credibility when fiscal pressures are intense. The topic also highlights that the Fed evolution was uneven, with progress often occurring only after prolonged conflict and costly experience. In conclusion, this volume is best suited to readers who want more than a summary of U.S. monetary history, including economists, central bankers, financial historians, policy professionals, graduate students, and serious general readers willing to work through a dense and detailed account. Its main benefit is intellectual. It shows how a powerful institution actually makes choices, how doctrines and organizational incentives filter data, and how political constraints shape what is presented as technical policy. Practically, the book offers durable lessons about central bank governance, the risks of tying monetary policy too closely to fiscal needs, and the importance of a coherent framework for interpreting money, credit, and financial stress. It stands out in its category because it is both comprehensive and source-based, reconstructing debates and decisions using internal materials rather than relying only on public statements or broad retrospective judgments. Compared with shorter narratives and many textbooks, Meltzer provides a granular view of the Fed as an evolving institution, not a black box that simply moves interest rates. By ending with the 1951 Accord, the book clarifies why modern arguments about Federal Reserve independence, crisis response, and policy coordination have deep roots in early 20th century experience. If you would like to support Alan H. Meltzer, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.